Thank you, Hani, and I'm sure some of the other speakers will mention it too, but we want to thank her for sort of pulling us all together and getting this panel together. I think it's really amazing that all of us are here and we were able to have a panel focused on this at APHA this year, so thank you. Thanks for all the panelists. So the work I'm talking about today is a cross-sectional survey of survivors of human trafficking who are in contact with support services in England, both health and social support services. And it's focusing on the relationship between violence and health in these communities. And the work was done at King's College London, which is a university there, in the Institute of Psychiatry, but also in collaboration with guys at St. Thomas's, King's College Hospital, South London and Maudsley, and also we have partners from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine who are involved in this project. I don't have anything to disclose. So as Dr. Chang was explaining, there are some very complicated definitions for human trafficking, and one of the difficulties in human trafficking research is that these definitions vary very much. The UN has a different definition from the United States. Different organizations use different definitions, so it's difficult to find consensus across the research when you do have such diverse groups and diverse definitions. For this project, we're categorizing individuals who've been trafficked as the movement of people by force, coercion, or deception for the purposes of exploitation. And I think this is a very broad definition, but it's important to use breadth, I think, because there is so much exploitation that occurs. People can be trafficked and exploited in a variety of settings, including sexual exploitation, which is perhaps the one individuals are most familiar with in the news and media, domestic servitude in industry, and also forced criminality. And when you're talking about the relationship between human trafficking and health, it's important to look at determinants that occur both prior to the trafficking situation, during exploitation, but also after trafficking, which is something that Dr. Chang pointed to. I think the determinants as well as the consequences are really important to consider. So prior to being recruited, individuals often have a history of abuse or deprivation, which often predisposes them or puts them at risk of being trafficked in the first place. They also have socio-environmental influences and health behaviors like substance abuse that are associated with poor mental and physical health outcomes. During travel and transit, there are also a number of risk factors to which individuals who are ultimately exploited are exposed to. High-risk transport, the initiation of violence, document confiscation, and there's also things like being exploited in return for passage or things like that, other types of exploitation and abuse. During exploitation, there's a significant number of risk factors. Individuals are often detained, living in deprived and unsanitary conditions, stress-filled conditions, and with very poor access to health services. Whilst they're exploited, they're also often working in poor conditions, experience physical, sexual, as well as psychological violence, and it's important not to forget about the sexual violence, psychological violence side of things, and also have restricted movement. Once an individual leaves a trafficking situation, they're also at risk of being re-trafficked. And they're particularly vulnerable, and this is often exploited to prior exploitation, stigma in the communities into which they're re-entering, and limited job options. There are also stressors associated with integration, for example, cultural adaptation. They're often in a new place without new social resources and with very different cultural infrastructure. There's shame and stigma, restricted access to services again, and particularly if they have an undocumented status or if there are legal complications. And there's also the fear of retribution from traffickers who can come after them, or there's a fear that they'll go after their family. So this study was called PROTECT, and it was a health survey of trafficked people. And the aim was to describe the health needs and also health service access needs of individuals who have been trafficked. It was a cross-sectional survey and included trafficked adults, those 18 or older, who are no longer in a setting of exploitation and are in contact with the National Health Service in the UK or post-trafficking support services in England. Eligible service users or individuals who had been trafficked were approached by their support workers or healthcare providers, and written information about the study was available in their preferred language, as were interpreters, to ensure that individuals who didn't speak English as a first language or had limited English literacy were still represented. We collected data on socio-demographic details, their medical history and their current physical symptoms using the Miller Abuse Scale. Their current psychological symptoms, we used the physical health questionnaire, the generalized anxiety disorder questionnaire, the primary care PTSD scale, and also we looked at suicidal ideation using the clinical interview schedule. We also looked at substance abuse using audit and the adult psychiatric morbidity survey. sexual and reproductive health and pregnancy for both men and women, not pregnancy, but sexual and reproductive health. Health risks including violence during exploitation but also prior to exploitation, and the health and social care needs and experiences using something called Canvas SF, as well as qualitative information. Multiple imputation was used to deal with bias from missing data, and we used multivariable logistic regression to look at factors that were associated with poor mental and physical health outcomes. This slide describes some of the demographic characteristics of those that were included. As you can see, it's a fairly diverse sample, and there were some significant differences between men and women, including in their age. Men were significantly more likely to be currently married or living with a partner. The number of months in contact with support services, and also whether or not they were afraid of the traffickers. I think it's interesting that a significantly high proportion of women reported being afraid of traffickers or retribution from traffickers. We also looked at trafficking experiences, and again, there's a significant difference between men and women in the type of exploitation they experienced. Women were more likely to be exploited for domestic servitude or experience sexual exploitation, and men were more likely to have been exploited for labor. And women were also more likely not to have had access to their passport identity documents or to have these have been taken away from them and withheld. Women also experienced more extreme restriction of movement and had also been out of the trafficking situation for a longer period of time prior to being involved in the study. Violence was one of the key things that we were looking at, and we found some really interesting differences between men and women. Women experienced a significantly higher rate of exposure to both physical and sexual violence prior to being trafficked, I think, which is something that was probably associated to their vulnerability to being trafficked. They also experienced a greater proportion of threats to self, threats to their family while they were trafficked, which often prevents someone from escaping a trafficking situation, exposure to physical and sexual violence in the trafficking situation, and there's a higher prevalence of injury among women while in the trafficking situation. If you look a little bit more closely at exposure to sexual violence whilst being trafficked, there was a very high rate of sexual violence against women who had been trafficked for sexual exploitation, which you might expect, but that number, 95%, is still a really big number. But when you look at women who were trafficked for domestic servitude, 54% still reported sexual violence while in the trafficking situation. And this is often found to be an under-representation because it's not always reported at as high rates as they are. So I think 54% in that category is something that's really important to consider, that it's not just limited to women who are being exploited for sexual purposes. We also looked at mental health, and again, there are significant differences between men and women. Women were more likely to have depression, anxiety, PTSD, and to report suicidal ideation than men were. And this is true in the general population, that women tend to have higher rates of these experiences, but there's a very large gap here between men and women. But looking at both men and women, if you look at the top row in the slide, you can see that 40.3% of men and 77.6% of women were measured to have significant level of symptoms corresponding to a diagnostic level of depression, anxiety, or PTSD. In the general population in the UK, it's around 25%. So even though women look like they have a lot more, both groups have very, very high levels of psychological symptoms for these disorders. This here is our multivariate analysis. And you can see at the bottom that two of the things that were most significantly associated with poor mental health for these groups were unmet social needs. So not necessarily corresponding to their health, but also their social needs, like Dr. Cheng was talking about. And also the lack of a confidant, which corresponds to social support, which is a really important coping resource. But often these individuals are very isolated, both because they're in a new place, but also because of the restriction and that they prior experienced, and also their fear in that situation, either for legal reasons, fear of their traffickers, the stigma that they're experiencing in the community. So isolation is important not to forget about. So in conclusion, there were a number of risk factors experienced prior to, during, and after trafficking. There were high rates of exposure to physical and sexual violence, both prior to but also during trafficking, and a significant difference between men and women. Also, women had very high rates of sexual violence, regardless of the type of exploitation they experience. There's always a persisting risk of being re-trafficked. There's a fear of traffickers, and there's significant unmet needs and limited access to health and social support in these communities. And as you just saw, there are high levels of symptoms for common mental disorders, PTSD, and suicidal ideation, both among men and women compared with the general population. Although women were found to have higher rates of all of these things. The implications of this point to the need for comprehensive health care. It has to be a fundamental component of post-trafficking care. All individuals who have been trafficked should have access to sexual health services, regardless of the type of exploitation that they experienced, because there are such high rates of sexual violence. There also need to be clear referral pathways between support services and medical services, and the integration of support and medical services, which I think Dr. Chang made a really strong point about. Support services must also address survivors' economic, social, and legal insecurities, as unmet social needs were a significant risk factor. Psychological interventions are definitely needed to support the recovery of this population because there are such high rates of poor mental health outcomes. But we really need further research in order to test psychological interventions to have evidence-based programs to support these communities. I'd like to thank the Protect Project and our funders, including the Department of Health and all of our collaborators within the NHS, and also the men and women who participated in the survey and were willing to talk about their experiences in order to inform improved health services for their communities. The first email address will go to the general project protect at kcl.ac.uk. But you can also email me at l.nellums. I'm at Imperial College London now, but I'm still collaborating with the team, so I would be happy to pass along.